Tellarat blinked. There was no dim star at the center. "It's not there," he said. "That's right. It's not there. And that's because its location is not included in the databanks of the computer. Since it passes the bounds of likelihood that those databanks were deliberately made incomplete in this respect for our benefit, I conclude that to the Foundation galactographers who designed those databanks, and who had tremendous quantities of information at their disposal, Gaia was unknown. Do you suppose if we had gone to Trantor," began Pellaret, "I suspect we would have found no data on Gaia there either. Its existence is kept a secret by the Seychellians, and even more so, I suspect, by the Gaians themselves. You yourself said a few days ago it was not entirely uncommon that some worlds deliberately stayed out of sight to avoid taxation or outside interference."
"Well, usually," said Pellaret, "when mapmakers and statisticians come across such a world, they are found to exist in thinly populated sections of the galaxy. It's isolation that makes it possible for them to hide. Gaia is not isolated."
"That's right. That's another of the things that makes it unusual. So let's leave this map on the screen so that you and I might continue to ponder the ignorance of our galactographers. And let me ask you again. In view of this ignorance on the part of the most knowledgeable of people, how did you come to hear of Gaia?"
"I have been gathering data on Earth myths, Earth legends, and Earth histories for over 30 years, my good Golan. Without my complete records, how could I possibly..."
"We can begin somewhere, Genoff. Did you learn about it in, say, the first 15 years of your research, or in the last 15?
"Oh, well, if you're going to be that broad, it was later on."
"You can do better than that. Suppose I suggest that you learned of Gaia only in the last couple of years." Trevise peered in Pellaret's direction, felt the absence of any ability to read an unseen expression in the dimness, and raised the light level of the room a bit. The glory of the representation of the night sky on the screen dimmed in proportion. Pellaret's expression was stony and revealed nothing.
"Well," said Trevise.
"I'm thinking," said Pellaret mildly.
"You may be right. I wouldn't swear to it. When I wrote Jim Bohr of Leadbet University, I didn't mention Gaia, though in that case it would have been appropriate to do so, and that was in 95, and that was 3 years ago. I think you're right, Golan."
"And how did you come upon it?" asked Trevise. "In a communication, a book, a scientific paper, some ancient song? How?
Come on."
Pellaret sat back and crossed his arms. He fell into deep thought and didn't move. Trevise said nothing and waited. Finally, Pellaret said, "In a private communication. But it's no use asking me from whom, my dear chap. I don't remember." Trevise moved his hands over his sash. They felt clammy as he continued his efforts to elicit information without too clearly forcing words into the other's mouth. He said, "From a historian? From an expert in mythology? From a galactographer?"
"No use. I cannot match a name to the communication."
"Because perhaps there was none."
"Oh, no, that scarcely seems possible."
"Why? Would you have rejected an anonymous communication?"
"I suppose not."
"Did you ever receive any?"
"Once in a long while. In recent years, I had become well known in certain academic circles as a collector of particular types of myths and legends, and some of my correspondents were occasionally kind enough to forward material they had picked up from non-academic sources. Sometimes these might not be attributed to anyone in particular."
Trevise said, "Yes, but did you ever receive anonymous information directly and not by way of some academic correspondent?"
"That sometimes happened, but very rarely."
"And can you be certain that this was not so in the case of Gaia?"
"Such anonymous communications took place so rarely that I should think I would remember if it had happened in this case. Still, I can't say certainly that the information was not of anonymous origin. Mind, though, that's not to say that I did receive the information from an anonymous source."
"I realize that, but it remains a possibility, doesn't it?" Pellaret said very reluctantly,
"I suppose it does. But what's all this about?"
"I'm not finished," said Trevise peremptorily.
"Where did you get the information from, anonymous or not? What world?"
Pellaret shrugged.
"Come now, I haven't the slightest idea."
"Could it possibly have been from Seychelles?"
"I told you, I don't know."
"I'm suggesting you did get it from Seychelles."
"You can suggest all you wish, but that does not necessarily make it so."
"No?" "When Quintessence pointed out the dim star at the center of the Five Sisters, you knew at once it was Gaia. You said so later on to Quintessence, identifying it before he did. Do you remember?"
"Yes, of course."
"How was that possible? How did you recognize at once that the dim star was Gaia?"
because in the material I had on Gaia, it was rarely referred to by that name. Euphemisms were common, many different ones. One of the euphemisms, several times repeated, was the little brother of the five sisters. Another was the Pentagon Center, and sometimes it was called Zero Pentagon. When Quintessets pointed out the five sisters and the central star, the allusions came irresistibly to mind. You never mentioned those allusions to me earlier. I didn't know what they meant, and I didn't think it would have been important to discuss the matter with you, who are a... Pellerat hesitated. A non-specialist? Yes. You realize, I hope, that the Pentagon of the Five Sisters is an entirely relative form. What do you mean? Trevise laughed affectionately. You surface worm. Do you think the sky has an objective shape of its own, that the stars are nailed in place? The Pentagon has the shape it has from the surface of the worlds of the planetary system to which Seychelles planet belongs, and from there only. From a planet circling any other star, the appearance of the Five Sisters is different. They are seen from a different angle, for one thing. For another, the five stars of the Pentagon are at different distances from Seychelles, and seen from other angles, there could be no visible relationship among them at all. One or two stars might be in one half of the sky, the others in the other half. See here. Trevise darkened the room again and leaned over the computer. There are 86 populated planetary systems making up the Seychelles Union. Let's keep Gaia, or the spot where Gaia ought to be, in place. As he said that, a small red circle appeared in the center of the Pentagon of the Five Sisters. And shift to the skies as seen from any of the other 86 worlds, taken at random. The sky shifted, and Pellerat blinked. The small red circle remained at the center of the screen, but the Five Sisters had disappeared. There were bright stars in the neighborhood, but no tight pentagon. Again the sky shifted, and again, and again. It went on shifting. The red circle remained in place always, but at no time did a small pentagon of equally bright stars appear. Sometimes what might be a distorted pentagon of stars, unequally bright, appeared, but nothing like the beautiful asterism Quintessets had pointed out. "That enough?" said Trevise. "I assure you, the Five Sisters can never be seen exactly as we have seen it from any populated world but the worlds of the Seychelles planetary system." Pellerat said, "The Seychellian view might have been exported to other planets. There were many proverbs in imperial times, some of which linger into our own, in fact, that are Trentor-centered. With Seychelles as secretive about Gaia as we know it to be? And why should worlds outside the Seychelles Union be interested? Why would they care about a little brother of the Five Sisters if there were nothing in the skies at which to point?" "Maybe you're right." "Then don't you see that your original information must have come from Seychelles itself, not just from somewhere in the Union, but precisely from the planetary system to which the capital world of the Union belongs?" Pellerat shook his head. "You make it sound as though it must, but it's not something I remember. I simply don't." "Nevertheless, you do see the force of my argument, don't you?" "Oh, yes, I do." "Next. When do you suppose the legend could have originated?" "Any time. I should suppose it developed far back in the imperial era. It has the feel of an ancient..." "You are wrong, Janoff. The Five Sisters are moderately close to Seychelles planet, which is why they're so bright. Four of them have high proper motions in consequence, and no two are part of a family, so that they move in different directions. Watch what happens as I shift the map backward in time slowly." Again, the red circle that marked the site of Gaia remained in place, but the pentagon slowly fell apart as four of the stars drifted in different directions and the fifth shifted slightly. "Look at that, Janoff," said Trevise. "Would you say that was a regular pentagon?" "Clearly lopsided," said Pellerat. "And is Gaia at the center?" "No, it's well to the side." "Very well. That is how the asterism looked 150 years ago. 1.5 centuries, that's all. The material you received concerning the Pentagon Center and so on made no real sense till this century anywhere, not even in Seychelles. The material you received had to originate in Seychelles, and sometime in this century, perhaps in the last decade. And you got it, even though Seychelles is so close-mouthed about Gaia." Trevise put the lights on, turned the star map off, and sat there, staring sternly at Pellerat. Pellerat said, "I'm confused. What's this about?" "You tell me. Consider. Somehow I got the idea into my head that the second foundation still existed. I was giving a talk during my election campaign. I started a bit of emotional byplay designed to squeeze votes out of the undecided with a dramatic, 'If the second foundation still existed,' and later that day I thought to myself, what if it did still exist?
I began reading history books, and within a week I was convinced. There was no real evidence, but I have always felt that I had the knack of snatching the right conclusion out of a welter of speculation. This time, though, Trevise brooded a bit, then went on. And look at what has happened since. Of all people, I chose Compore as my confidant, and he betrayed me. Whereupon Mayor Brano had me arrested and sent into exile. Why into exile, rather than just having me imprisoned or trying to threaten me into silence? And why in a very late model ship, which gives me extraordinary powers of jumping through the galaxy? And why, of all things, does she insist I take you and suggest that I help you search for Earth? And why was I so certain that we should not go to Trantor? I was convinced you had a better target for our investigations, and at once you come up with the mystery world of Gaia, concerning which, as it now turns out, you gained information under very puzzling circumstances. We go to Seychelles, the first natural stop, and at once we encounter Compore, who gives us a circumstantial story about Earth and its death. He then assures us its location is in the Sirius sector and urges us to go there. Pellaret said, There you are. You seem to be implying that all circumstances are forcing us toward Gaia, but as you say, Compore tried to persuade us to go elsewhere. And in response, I was determined to continue on our original line of investigation out of my sheer distrust for the man. Don't you suppose that that was what he might have been counting on? He may have deliberately told us to go elsewhere just to keep us from doing so. That's mere romance, muttered Pellaret. Is it? Let's go on. We get in touch with Quintessets simply because he was handy. Not at all, said Pellaret. I recognized his name. It seemed familiar to you. You had never read anything he had written that you could recall. Why was it familiar to you? In any case, it turned out he had read a paper of yours and was overwhelmed by it. And how likely was that? You yourself admit your work is not widely known. What's more, the young lady leading us to him quite gratuitously mentions Gaia and goes on to tell us it is in hyperspace, as though to be sure we keep it in mind. When we ask Quintessets about it, he behaves as though he doesn't want to talk about it, but he doesn't throw us out, even though I am rather rude to him. He takes us to his home instead, and on the way there goes to the trouble of pointing out the five sisters. He even makes sure we note the dim star at the center. Why? Is not all this an extraordinary concatenation of coincidence? Pellaret said, If you list it like that...
List it any way you please, said Trevise.
I don't believe in extraordinary concatenations of coincidence.
What does all this mean, then? That we are being maneuvered to Gaia?
Yes.
By whom?
Trevise said, Surely there can be no question about that. Who is capable of adjusting minds, of giving gentle nudges to this one or that, of managing to divert progress in this direction or that? You're going to tell me it's the second foundation.
Well, what have we been told about Gaia?
It is untouchable. Fleets that move against it are destroyed. People who reach it do not return. Even the mule didn't dare move against it, and the mule, in fact, was probably born there. Surely it seems that Gaia is the second foundation, and finding that, after all, is my ultimate goal. Pellaret shook his head.
But according to some historians, the second foundation stopped the mule. How could he have been one of them?
A renegade, I suppose.
But why should we be so relentlessly maneuvered toward the second foundation by the second foundation?
Trevise's eyes were unfocused, his brow furrowed. He said, Let's reason it out. It has always seemed important to the Second Foundation that as little information as possible about it should be available to the galaxy. Ideally, it wants its very existence to remain unknown. We know that much about them. For 120 years, the Second Foundation was thought to be extinct, and that must have suited them right down to the galactic core. Yet when I began to suspect that they did exist, they did nothing. Compore knew. They might have used him to shut me up one way or another, had me killed even. Yet they did nothing.
Pellaret said, They had you arrested, if you want to blame that on the Second Foundation. According to what you told me, that resulted in the people of Terminus not knowing about your views. The people of the Second Foundation accomplished that much without violence, and they may be devotees of Salvar Hardin's remark that violence is the last refuge of the incompetent.
But keeping it from the people of Terminus accomplishes nothing. Mayor Brano knows my view, and, at the very least, must wonder if I am correct. So now, you see, it is too late for them to harm us. If they had gotten rid of me to begin with, they would be in the clear. If they had left me alone altogether, they might have still remained in the clear, for they might have maneuvered Terminus into believing I was an eccentric, perhaps a madman. The prospective ruin of my political career might even have forced me into silence as soon as I saw what the announcement of my beliefs would mean. And now it is too late for them to do anything. Mayor Brano was suspicious enough of the situation to send Compor after me, and, having no faith in him either, being wiser than I was, she placed a hyper-relay on Compor's ship. In consequence, she knows we are on Seychelles. And last night, while you were sleeping, I had our computer place a message directly into the computer of the Foundation ambassador here on Seychelles, explaining that we were on our way to Gaia. I took the trouble of giving its coordinates, too. If the Second Foundation does anything to us now, I am certain that Brano will have the matter investigated, and the concentrated attention of the Foundation must surely be what they don't want. Would they care about attracting the Foundation's attention if they are so powerful? Yes, said Trevise forcefully. They lie hidden because in some ways they must be weak, and because the Foundation is technologically advanced, perhaps beyond even what Selden himself might have foreseen. The very quiet, even stealthy way in which they've been maneuvering us to their world would seem to show their eager desire to do nothing that will attract attention. And if so, then they have already lost, at least in part. For they've attracted attention, and I doubt they can do anything to reverse the situation. Pellerette said,
But why did they go through all this? Why did they ruin themselves, if your analysis is correct, by angling for us across the galaxy? What is it they want of us?
Trevise stared at Pellerette and flushed. Janoff, he said, I have a feeling about this. I had this gift of coming to a correct conclusion on the basis of almost nothing. There's a kind of sureness about me that tells me when I'm right. And I'm sure now. There's something I have that they want, and want enough to risk their very existence for. I don't know what it can be, but I've got to find out. Because if I've got it, and if it's that powerful, then I want to be able to use it for what I feel is right. He shrugged slightly. Do you still want to come along with me, old friend, now that you see how much a madman I am? Pellerette said,
I told you I had faith in you. I still do.
And Trevise laughed with enormous relief.
Marvelous. Because another feeling I have is that you are, for some reason, also essential to this whole thing. In that case, Genoff, we move on to Gaia. Full speed. Forward.
56. Mayor Harla Brano looked distinctly older than her 62 years. She did not always look older, but she did now. She had been sufficiently wrapped up in thought to forget to avoid the mirror and had seen her image on her way into the map room, so she was aware of the haggardness of her appearance. She sighed. It drained the life out of one. 5 years a mayor, and for 12 years before that, the real power behind two figureheads. All of it had been quiet, all of it successful, all of it draining. How would it have been, she wondered, if there had been strain, failure, disaster? Not so bad for her personally, she suddenly decided. Action would have been invigorating. It was the horrible knowledge that nothing but drift was possible that had worn her out. It was the Selden plan that was successful, and it was the Second Foundation that made sure it would continue to be. She, as the strong hand at the helm of the Foundation, actually the First Foundation, but no one on Terminus ever thought of adding the adjective, merely rode the crest. History would say little or nothing about her. She merely sat at the controls of a spaceship while the spaceship was maneuvered from without. Even Indbur III, who had presided over the Foundation's catastrophic fall to the Mule, had done something. He had at least collapsed. For Mabrano, there would be nothing. Unless this Golan Trevise, this thoughtless councilman, this lightning rod, made it possible. She looked at the map thoughtfully. It was not the kind of structure produced by a modern computer. It was, rather, a three-dimensional cluster of lights that pictured the galaxy holographically in midair. Though it could not be made to move, to turn, to expand, or to contract, one could move about it and see it from any angle. A large section of the galaxy, perhaps a third of the whole, excluding the core, which was a no-life's land, turned red when she touched a contact. That was the Foundation Federation, the more than 7 million inhabited worlds ruled by the Council and by herself, the 7 million inhabited worlds who voted for and were represented in the House of Worlds, which debated matters of minor importance and then voted on them, and never, by any chance, dealt with anything of major importance. Another contact, and a faint pink jutted outward from the edges of the Federation here and there. Spheres of influence. This was not Foundation territory, but the regions, though nominally independent, would never dream of resistance to any Foundation move. There was no question in her mind that no power in the galaxy could oppose the Foundation, not even the second foundation, if one but knew where it was, that the foundation could, at will, reach out its fleet of modern ships and simply set up the Second Empire. But only 5 centuries had passed since the beginning of the plan. The plan called for 10 centuries before the Second Empire could be set up, and the second foundation would make sure the plan would hold. The mayor shook her sad gray head. If the foundation acted now, it would somehow fail. Though its ships were irresistible, action now would fail. Unless Trevise, the lightning rod, drew the lightning of the second foundation, and the lightning could be traced back to its source. She looked about. Where was Codel? This was no time for him to be late. It was as though her thought had called him, for he came striding in, smiling cheerfully, looking more grandfatherly than ever with his gray-white mustache and tanned complexion. Grandfatherly, but not old. To be sure, he was 8 years younger than she was. How was it he showed no marks of strain? Did not 15 years as director of security leave its scar? 57. Codel nodded slowly in the formal greeting that was necessary in initiating a discussion with the mayor. It was a tradition that had existed since the bad days of the Inboers. Almost everything had changed, but etiquette least of all. He said, "Sorry I'm late, Mayor, but your arrest of Councilman Trevise is finally beginning to make its way through the anesthetized skin of the council." "Oh," said the mayor phlegmatically, "are we in for a palace revolution?" "Not the least chance. We're in control. But there'll be noise."
"Let them make noise. It will make them feel better, and I shall stay out of the way. I can count, I suppose, on general public opinion?"
"I think you can, especially away from Terminus. No one outside Terminus cares what happens to a stray councilman."
"I do."
"Ah, more news?"
"Leono," said the mayor, "I want to know about Seychelles."
"I'm not a two-legged history book," said Leono Codel, smiling.
"I don't want history. I want the truth. Why is Seychelles independent? Look at it."
She pointed to the red of the foundation on the holographic map, and there, well into the inner spirals, was an in-pocketing of white. Brano said,
"We've got it almost encapsulated, almost sucked in, yet it's white. Our map doesn't even show it as a loyal ally in pink."
Codel shrugged. "It's not officially a loyal ally, but it never bothers us. It is neutral."
"All right. See this, then."
Another touch at the controls. The red sprang out distinctly further. It covered nearly half the galaxy.
"That," said Mayor Brano, "was the Mule's realm at the time of his death. If you'll peer in among the red, you'll find the Seychelles Union completely surrounded this time, but still white. It is the only enclave left free by the Mule."
"It was neutral then, too."
"The Mule had no great respect for neutrality."
"He seems to have had in this case."
"Seems to have had. What has Seychelles got?"
Codel said, "Nothing. Believe me, Mayor, she is ours any time we want her."
"Is she? Yet somehow she isn't ours."
"There's no need to want her."
Brano sat back in her chair, and with a sweep of her arm over the controls, turned the galaxy dark. "I think we now want her."
"Pardon, Mayor?"
"Leono, I sent that foolish councilman into space as a lightning rod. I felt that the Second Foundation would see him as a greater danger than he was, and see the Foundation itself as the lesser danger. The lightning would strike him and reveal its origin to us."
"Yes, Mayor."
"My intention was that he go to the decayed ruins of Trantor to fumble through what, if anything, was left of its library and search for the Earth. That's the world, you remember, that these wearisome mystics tell us was the site of origin of humanity, as though that matters. Even in the unlikely case, it is true. The Second Foundation couldn't possibly have believed that it was really what he was after, and they would have moved to find out what he was really looking for."
"But he didn't go to Trantor."
"No. Quite unexpectedly, he has gone to Seychelles. Why?"
"I don't know. But please forgive an old bloodhound whose duty it is to suspect everything, and tell me how you know he and this Pellerat have gone to Seychelles. I know that Kampor reports it, but how far can we trust Kampor?"
"The hyper-relay tells us that Kampor's ship has indeed landed on Seychelles planet."
"Undoubtedly. But how do you know that Trevise and Pellerat have? Kampor may have gone to Seychelles for his own reasons, and may not know or care where the others are."
"The fact is that our ambassador on Seychelles has informed us of the arrival of the ship on which we placed Trevise and Pellerat. I am not ready to believe the ship arrived at Seychelles without them. What is more, Kampor reports having talked to them, and if he cannot be trusted, we have other reports placing them at Seychelles University, where they consulted with a historian of no particular note."
"None of this," said Codel mildly, "has reached me."
Brano sniffed. "Do not feel stepped on. I am dealing with this personally, and the information has now reached you, with not much in the way of a delay either. The latest news just received is from the ambassador. Our lightning rod is moving on. He stayed on Seychelles Planet 2 days, then left. He is heading for another planetary system, he says, some 10 parsecs away. He gave the name and the galactic coordinates of his destination to the ambassador, who passed them on to us.
Is there anything corroborative from Compor?
Compor's message that Trevise and Pellaret have left Seychelles came even before the ambassador's message. Compor has not yet determined where Trevise is going. Presumably, he will follow.
Codel said, "We are missing the whys of the situation." He popped a pastille into his mouth and sucked at it meditatively. Why did Trevise go to Seychelles? Why did he leave?
The question that intrigues me most is, where? Where is Trevise going?
You did say, Mayor, did you not, that he gave the name and coordinates of his destination to the ambassador. Are you implying that he lied to the ambassador, or that the ambassador is lying to us?
Even assuming everyone told the truth all round, and that no one made any errors, there is a name that interests me. Trevise told the ambassador he was going to Gaia. That's G-A-I-A. Trevise was careful to spell it.
Codel said, Gaia? I never heard of it.
Indeed? That's not strange.
Brano pointed to the spot in the air where the map had been.
Upon the map in this room, I can set up at a moment's notice every star, supposedly, around which there circles an inhabited world, and many prominent stars with uninhabited systems. Over 30 million stars can be marked out, if I handle the controls properly, in single units, in pairs, in clusters. I can mark them out in any of 5 different colors, one at a time, or all together. What I cannot do is locate Gaia on the map. As far as the map is concerned, Gaia does not exist.
Codel said, For every star the map shows, there are 10,000 it doesn't show.
Granted. But the stars it doesn't show lack inhabited planets, and why would Trevise want to go to an uninhabited planet?
Have you tried the central computer? It has all 300 billion galactic stars listed.
I've been told it has. But does it? We know very well, you and I, that there are thousands of inhabited planets that have escaped listing on any of our maps, not only on the one in this room, but even on the central computer. Gaia is apparently one of them.
Codel's voice remained calm, even coaxing. Mayor, there may well be nothing at all to be concerned about. Trevise may be off on a wild goose chase, or he may be lying to us, and there is no star called Gaia, and no star at all at the coordinates he gave us. He is trying to throw us off his scent now that he has met Compor and perhaps guesses he is being traced.
How will this throw us off the scent? Compor will still follow. No, Leono, I have another possibility in mind, one with far greater potentiality for trouble. Listen to me.
She paused and said, This room is shielded, Leono. Understand that. We cannot be overheard by anyone, so please feel free to speak,
and I will speak freely as well. This Gaia is located, if we accept the information, 10 parsecs from Seychelles Planet, and is therefore part of the Seychelles Union. The Seychelles Union is a well-explored portion of the galaxy. All its star systems, inhabited or not inhabited, are recorded, and the inhabited ones are known in detail. Gaia is the one exception. Inhabited or not, none have heard of it. It is present in no map. Add to this that the Seychelles Union maintains a peculiar state of independence with respect to the Foundation Federation, and did so even with respect to the Mule's former realm. It has been independent since the fall of the Galactic Empire.
What of all this? Asked Codel cautiously.
Surely the 2 points I have made must be connected. Seychelles incorporates a planetary system that is totally unknown, and Seychelles is untouchable. The two cannot be independent. Whatever Gaia is, it protects itself. It sees to it that there is no knowledge of its existence outside its immediate surroundings, and it protects those surroundings so that outsiders cannot take over.
You are telling me, Mayor, that Gaia is the seat of the Second Foundation?
I am telling you that Gaia deserves inspection.
May I mention an odd point that might be difficult to explain by this theory?
Please do.
If Gaia is the Second Foundation, and if for centuries it has protected itself physically against intruders, protecting all of the Seychelles Union as a broad, deep shield for itself, and if it has even prevented knowledge of itself leaking into the galaxy, then why has all that protection suddenly vanished? Trevise and Pellaret leave Terminus, and even though you had advised them to go to Trantor, they go immediately and without hesitation to Seychelles and now to Gaia. What is more, you can think of Gaia and speculate on it. Why are you not somehow prevented from doing so?
Mayor Brano did not answer for a long time.
Her head was bent, and her gray hair gleamed dully in the light. Then she said, "Because I think Councilman Trevise has somehow upset things. He has done something, or is doing something, that is in some way endangering the Selden plan."
"That surely is impossible, Mayor."
"I suppose everything and everyone has its flaws. Even Harry Selden was not perfect, surely. Somewhere the plan has a flaw, and Trevise has stumbled upon it, perhaps without even knowing that he has. We must know what is happening, and we must be on the spot."
Finally, Cadell looked grave. "Don't make decisions on your own, Mayor. We don't want to move without adequate consideration."
"Don't take me for an idiot, Leono. I'm not going to make war. I'm not going to land an expeditionary force on Gaia. I just want to be on the spot, or near it, if you prefer. Leono, find out for me. I hate talking to a war office that is as ridiculously hidebound as one is sure to be after 120 years of peace. But you don't seem to mind. Just how many warships are stationed close to Seychelles? Can we make their movements seem routine and not like a mobilization?"
"In these piping times of peace, there are not many ships in the vicinity, I am sure, but I will find out."
"Even two or three will be sufficient, especially if one is of the supernova class."
"What do you want to do with them?"
"I want them to nudge as close to Seychelles as they can without creating an incident, and I want them sufficiently close to each other to offer mutual support."
"What's all this intended for?"
"Flexibility. I want to be able to strike if I have to."
"Against the second foundation? If Gaia can keep itself isolated and untouchable against the Mule, it can surely withstand a few ships now."
Breno said, with the gleam of battle in her eyes, "My friend, I told you that nothing and no one is perfect, not even Harry Selden. In setting up his plan, he could not help being a person of his times. He was a mathematician of the days of the dying empire, when technology was moribund. It followed that he could not have made sufficient allowance in his plan for technological advance. Gravitics, for instance, is a whole new direction of advance he could not possibly have guessed at. And there are other advances, too."
"Gaia might also have advanced."
"In isolation? Come, there are 10 quadrillion human beings within the Foundation Federation, from among whom contributors to technological advance can step forward. A single isolated world can do nothing in comparison. Our ships will advance, and I will be with them."
"Pardon me, Mayor, what was that?"
"I will be going myself to the ships that will gather at the borders of Seychelles. I wish to see the situation for myself."
Cadell's mouth fell open for a moment. He swallowed and made a distinct noise as he did so. "Mayor, that is not wise."
If ever a man clearly intended a stronger remark, Cadell did. "Wise or not," said Brano violently, "I will do it. I am tired of Terminus and of its endless political battles, its infighting, its alliances and counter-alliances, its betrayals and renewals. I've had 17 years at the center of it, and I want to do something else, anything else. Out there," she waved her hand in a direction taken at random, "the whole history of the galaxy may be changing, and I want to take part in the process."
"You know nothing about such things, Mayor."
"Who does, Leono?"
She rose stiffly to her feet.
"As soon as you bring me the information I need on the ships, and as soon as I can make arrangements for carrying on with the foolish business at home, I will go. And, Leono, don't try to maneuver me out of this decision in any way, or I'll wipe out our long friendship in a stroke and break you. I can still do that."
Cadell nodded. "I know you can, Mayor. But before you decide, may I ask you to reconsider the power of Selden's plan? What you intend may be suicide."
"I have no fears on that score, Leono. It was wrong with respect to the Mule, whom it could not anticipate, and a failure to anticipate at one time implies the possibility of failure at another."
Cadell sighed. "Well, then, if you are really determined, I will support you to the best of my ability and with complete loyalty."
"Good. I warn you once again that you had better mean that remark with all your heart. And with that in mind, Leono, let us move on to Gaia. Forward."
Chapter 15. Gaia S. 58. Soranovi stepped into the control room of the small and rather old-fashioned ship that was carrying Storj Endebol and herself across the parsecs in deliberate jumps. She had clearly been in the compact cleaning room, where oils, warm air, and a minimum of water freshened her body. She had a robe wrapped about her and was holding it tightly to herself in an agony of modesty. Her hair was dry but tangled. She said in a low voice,
"Master?"
Endebol looked up from his charts and from his computer. "Yes, Novi?" I be sorrow-laden. She paused and then said slowly, I am very sorry to bother you, master.
Then she slipped again.
But I be loss-ridden for my clothing.
Your clothing? Jendeball stared at her blankly for a moment, and then rose to his feet in an excess of contrition. No, V, I forgot. They needed cleaning, and they're in the detergent hamper. They're cleaned, dried, folded, all set. I should have taken them out and placed them in clear sight. I forgot.
I did not like to,
she looked down at herself,
offend.
You don't offend, said Jendeball cheerily. Look, I promise you that when this is over, I shall see to it that you have a great deal of clothing, new and in the latest fashion. We left in a hurry, and it never occurred to me to bring a supply. But really, Novi, there are only the two of us, and we'll be together for some time in very close quarters. And it's needless to be so concerned about... He gestured vaguely, became aware of the horrified look in her eyes, and thought,
Well,
she is only a country girl after all, and has her standards. Probably wouldn't object to improprieties of all kinds, but with her clothes on. Then he felt ashamed of himself, and was glad that she was no scholar who could sense his thoughts. He said, Shall I get your clothes for you?
Oh, no, master. It be not for you. I know where they are.
He next saw her properly dressed, and with her hair combed. There was a distinct shyness about her.
I am ashamed, master, to have behaved so improperly. I should have found them for myself.
No matter, said Jendeball. You are doing very well with your galactic, Novi. You are picking up the language of scholars very quickly. Novi smiled suddenly. Her teeth were somewhat uneven, but that scarcely detracted from the manner in which her face brightened and grew almost sweet unto praise, thought Jendeball. He told himself that it was for that reason that he rather liked to praise her.
The Hamish will think little of me when I am back home, she said. They will say I am a word-chopper. That is what they call someone who speaks odd. They do not like such.
I doubt that you will be going back to the Hamish, Novi, said Jendeball. I am sure there will continue to be a place for you in the complex, with the scholars, that is, when this is over.
I would like that, master.
I don't suppose you would care to call me Speaker Jendeball, or just... No, I see you wouldn't, he said, responding to her look of scandalized objection. Oh, well.
It would not be fitting, master. But may I ask when this will be over?
Jendeball shook his head. I scarcely know. Right now, I must merely get to a particular place as quickly as I can. This ship, which is a very good ship for his kind, is slow, and as quickly as I can is not very quick. You see, he gestured at the computer and the charts, I must work out ways to get across large stretches of space, but the computer is limited in its abilities, and I am not very skillful.
Must you be there quickly, because there is danger, master?
What makes you think there is danger, Novi?
Because I watch you sometimes, when I don't think you see me, and your face looks, I do not know the word. Not afeard, I mean frightened, and not bad expecting either.
Apprehensive, muttered Jendeball.
You look concerned. Is that the word?
It depends. What do you mean by concern, Novi?
I means you look as though you are saying to yourself, What am I going to do next in this great trouble?
Jendeball looked astonished. That is concerned. But do you see that in my face, Novi? Back in the place of scholars, I am extremely careful that no one should see anything in my face. But I did think that, alone in space, except for you, I could relax and let it sit around in its underwear, so to speak. I'm sorry. That has embarrassed you. What I'm trying to say is that if you're so perceptive, I shall have to be more careful. Every once in a while, I have to relearn the lesson that even non-mentalics can make shrewd guesses. Novi looked blank.
I don't understand, master.
I'm talking to myself, Novi. Don't be concerned. See, there's that word again.
But is there danger?
There's a problem, Novi. I do not know what I shall find when I reach Seychelles. That is the place to which we are going. I may find myself in a situation of great difficulty.
Does that not mean danger?
No, because I will be able to handle it.
But how can you tell this?
Because I am a scholar, and I am the best of them. There is nothing in the galaxy I cannot handle.
Master,
and something very like agony twisted Novi's face,
I do not wish to give offense, and make you angry. I have seen you with that oafish Rufirant, and you were in danger then, and he was only a Hamish farmer. No, I do not know what awaits you, and you know not either.
Jendeval felt chagrined. Are you afraid, Novi?
Not for myself, master. I am afraid for you.
You can say, I fear, muttered Jendeval. That is good galactic, too. For a moment he was engaged in thought. Then he looked up, took Sora Novi's rather coarse hands in his, and said, "Novi, I don't want you to fear anything. Let me explain. You know how you could tell there was, or rather might be, danger from the look on my face, almost as though you could read my thoughts?"
"Yes."
"I can read thoughts better than you can. That is what scholars learn to do, and I am a very good scholar."
Novi's eyes widened, and her hand pulled loose from his. She seemed to be holding her breath. "You can read my thoughts."
Jindabaw held up a finger hurriedly. "I don't, Novi. I don't read your thoughts, except when I must. I do not read your thoughts." He knew that in a practical sense he was lying. It was impossible to be with Sora Novi and not understand the general tenor of some of her thoughts. One scarcely needed to be a second foundationer for that. Jindabaw felt himself to be on the edge of blushing. But even from a Hamish woman, such an attitude was flattering. And yet she had to be reassured out of common humanity. He said, "I can also change the way people think. I can make people feel hurt. I can..." But Novi was shaking her head.
"How can you do all that, master? Rufirant..."
"Forget Rufirant," said Jindabaw testily. "I could have stopped him in a moment. I could have made him fall to the ground. I could have made all the Hamish..." He stopped suddenly and felt uneasily that he was boasting, that he was trying to impress this provincial woman, and she was shaking her head still.
"Master," she said, "you are trying to make me not afraid, but I am not afraid except for you, so there is no need. I know you are a great scholar, and can make this ship fly through space where it seems to me that no person could do aught but, I mean, anything but be lost. And you use machines I cannot understand, and that no Hamish person could understand. But you need not tell me of these powers of mind, which surely cannot be so, since all the things you say you could have done to Rufirant you did not do, though you are in danger."
Jindabaw pressed his lips together. Leave it at that, he thought. If the woman insists she is not afraid for herself, let it go at that. Yet he did not want her to think of him as a weakling and braggart. He simply did not. He said, "If I did nothing to Rufirant, it was because I did not wish to. We scholars must never do anything to the Hamish. We are guests on your world. Do you understand that?"
"You are our masters. That is what we always say."
For a moment, Jindabaw was diverted. "How is it, then, that this Rufirant attacked me?"
"I do not know," she said simply. "I don't think he knew. He must have been mind-wandering, out of his mind."
Jindabaw grunted. "In any case, we do not harm the Hamish. If I had been forced to stop him by hurting him, I might have been poorly thought of by the other scholars, and might perhaps have lost my position. But to save myself being badly hurt, I might have had to handle him just a small bit, the smallest possible." Novi drooped.
"Then I need not have come rushing in like a great fool myself."
"You did exactly right," said Jindabaw. "I have just said I would have done ill to have hurt him. You made it unnecessary to do so. You stopped him, and that was well done. I am grateful.